This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Daily Digest. On the bigger picture, I'm T. Xiao Ik with Lim Su An and Kelly Anisa. Earlier in the hour, in our first story, we looked at the findings of an Ipsos survey about how 29 countries perceive aging and how Malaysia fared in that survey. And we were actually number four in the ranking of those countries in terms of our concerns over aging. And so on that note, we've been asking you...
Yes, on Twitter, I've been asking what do you fear most about aging. Your options are finances, health, independence, or I don't think about it. You can take that poll at BFM Radio on Twitter. You can also WhatsApp us your thoughts at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
And in our second story, do war metaphors have a positive or negative effect on you when it comes to cancer prevention and treatment? So what do I mean by war metaphors? Well, take a look at these taglines. Australia's Fight Cancer Foundation says, keep families together during the fight of their lives. Mm. You have Beat Cancer Like a Boss, which is the tagline of the American Cancer Society's new campaign targeting the low survival rate among African Americans. Another example is Cancer Research UK, whose slogan is "Together we will beat cancer."
So when we describe people with cancer, we either say they are survivors or brave fighters. You know, if they die of cancer, we say he or she, quote, lost the battle with cancer.
And organizations and health authorities may have started using war metaphors like this to motivate people, make them more vigilant at identifying signs and symptoms of cancer. But does this language achieve the objective? So new research suggests that the answer is no.
Yeah. So let's take a look at that study. So two psychologists, David Hauser from Queen's University in Ontario, Canada, and Norbert Schwartz from the University of Southern California in the US, studied the impact of using war metaphors in cancer care. So they carried out four separate experiments involving nearly 1,000 generally healthy volunteers. So these are people who don't currently have cancer. And they asked the volunteers to read short passages about cancer patients that included number one, battle metaphors, or number two, journey metaphors, or no metaphors at all. So journey metaphors are, for example, if you say, Joe has cancer and he knows that for the foreseeable future, every day will be a journey with the disease. The road he has to travel will not always be an easy one. So it's more about living and journeying with cancer rather than fighting it.
And then after that, the participants rated how difficult they would expect the person's cancer treatment to be. And in the third and fourth experiment, the researchers asked specifically about how the language would affect their beliefs about preventing cancer and about seeing a doctor in the event of a cancer scare themselves. So the results showed that those who read the passages with war metaphors rated cancer treatment as being more difficult than those who read the same passages with journey metaphors or even no metaphors at all.
And they also found that these war metaphors made people more fatalistic when it came to thinking about cancer. So when they read passages that had war phrases, people tended to agree more with statements such as, if someone is meant to get cancer, they will get it no matter what they do. Rather than encouraging people to get to a doctor faster if they had suspicious symptoms, the military phrases were found to have no beneficial effect. So that's quite a concern. Both the fact that it makes them fatalistic and delay going to see a doctor because that's the opposite effect of what you want to achieve with these kinds of messages.
Because it's supposed to be motivational,
yes,
right? That's the purpose.
Right.
So you could argue that this study was done among healthy volunteers. So, you know, what is the impact of war metaphors on those who actually have cancer? So an article in The Guardian quoted Mandy Mahoney, who has incurable metastatic breast cancer, as saying, quote, the brave fighter, warrior, and survivor standard descriptors put an awful lot of pressure on the newly diagnosed. You feel like you're letting people down if you can't manage permanent positivity or you have an emotionally wobbly day. I'm not brave or inspirational. I'm just trying to live the life I have left well. So in that same article, Martin Ledwick from Cancer Research UK, who is the head information nurse, said that some people do see their cancer experience as a fight or a battle, but for others, we know that fighting talk can be be unhelpful and make them feel guilty or inadequate if they feel unable to fight or if their cancer comes back in spite of that treatment.
Mm, and perhaps the most problematic aspect of the fight metaphors is the implication that, you know, conversely, someone who dies of cancer didn't try hard enough or wasn't a brave fighter. That's sort of the implication of the whole battle kind of narrative.
Yeah.
So to get the perspective of someone who works directly in cancer prevention and advocacy efforts, I spoke to Dr. Muralitharan Munisamy. He's the medical director of the National Cancer Society Malaysia. And he not only works with cancer patients, but also speaks to communities when it comes to preventing cancer. So it's a very interesting conversation. And here's a clip from that. What did you think about the findings of this particular study?
In terms of the findings of the study, they are interesting and it's narrative changing in a way because the authors are quite right. It's going to be a paradigm shift in the way that we communicate, especially with cancer patients. But I suppose, it's true of all other chronic diseases as well. But there is a very important caveat onto that study, which is this is really very relevant onto a very particular set of people, mm-hmm. like a community or a country, and that's important. So it would be very interesting that it highlights to us that we need to actually assess to see whether it's worth changing the narrative or repurposing the way how we talk to patients. And that, I think that's an important point coming out of that study. Do we immediately stop using the language that we use? I think that's going to be something we need to really look at very carefully.
So the study looked at people who do not have cancer and the impact of that kind of language on their health-seeking behaviours. But do you think there's a difference if you look at how the narrative works with people with cancer?
So when you look at two parts of the study, you notice that they looked at a segment of whether it was helpful with prevention mm-hmm. first. And the other part was on whether, prevention would actually be affected by the fact that people would now have like a fatalistic attitude mm-hmm. towards diseases like cancer, as in now it's not, since I can't do anything about it, I'll just
mm-hmm.
keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these are actually one of the kind of interesting points that was for me itself like very enlightening because I did not think that people would actually relate that very closely in terms of prevention, in terms of preventive healthcare and changing the attitude towards preventive healthcare. But what we do see is in the context of cancer patients, mm-hmm. this is actually something which is very worrying. So the whole reason, if I could go back a little one step to tell you about why people have just kind of militarized the cancer terminology, if I could term it that way,
mm-hmm.
it's because of the fact that even in settings like the UK, but even in especially more so actually in settings like Asia and Malaysia, mm-hmm. a lot of people fall into this kind of mental health issues when they are diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's often a very fatalistic view of, oh dear, I can't do anything much. I'm going to die, so mm-hmm. I will just live out the rest of my life or what remains of my life and mm-hmm. just let it end as it will. And this actually has resulted in what we can see, a lot of people actually dropping out from the treatment pathways.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the very successful efforts has been to actually via militarization of this terminology in the sense that it's now a war and, we have the soldiers, the bullets, the ammunition to kind of fight that war. And that actually has been important for us, even for me personally, when I speak to patients,
mm-hmm.
in getting them on board, because now they have a purpose, in the mm-hmm. sense that purpose is to get on board as part of this arsenal that we bring to bear against this disease that has stricken you as a person.
Mm.
And in fact, I would argue that in terms of how it relates to cancer patients, is it actually tends to move them away from the fatalistic fatalistic kind of ideas that they might develop and gives them more of a fighting kind of impetus to kind of get on board to fight the disease.
So that that does appear contrary to what these two psychologists found. So then, you know, as you said earlier, you wouldn't want to change the narrative just based on one study or one finding.
And especially more so if that finding is not in a local context.
Mm.
So that, you know, communications is really based on local understanding, local kind of frameworks, cultural backgrounds, so on and so forth.
Okay. So for our Malaysian context, what... how do you, in National Cancer Society, assess the effectiveness of the language that you use?
Okay, so for one, I mean, I can tell you, like I was telling you, one of the things that's coming up from me reading that material as well is the fact that maybe we need to have a specific language on how we deal with prevention. And actually, the National Cancer Society, because we do a lot of prevention work as well,
mm-hmm.
so our narrative for prevention is very different from the narrative that we have for kind of keeping patients on their treatment journey.
Mm.
So in terms of prevention, it's rather than take a really fatalistic approach, or we don't really use a language that's military in nature, in the sense that a lot of it now, the language on cancer prevention is about individual risk and individual risk reduction. So rather than taking the approach that, oh, you know, this is a war, sooner or later everybody's going to get cancer, you know, you're going to die, rather than taking that approach, we take the approach that, look, the many risks that everyone's exposed to, you know, you cross a road, you may get into an accident, and so on and so forth. And so life... or management of life is about risk reduction. We do this every day. Why do we wear a helmet? Why do we wear a seatbelt?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the risk of someone picking up a disease is just based on all these kind of different factors. And risk reduction as a form of preventive medicine is the way you go about, you know, lowering your risk and dealing with diseases like cancer and other non-communicable diseases. And that's the kind of narrative that we do take in terms of preventive kind of healthcare. So in that, there's already a dichotomy in the way we speak already. But when it comes to cancer patients, really, the language is exactly what the authors described, which is a very militaristic approach. Because in a lot of our patients, we find that, you know, that is the language that helps get them on board. But of course, at the same time, that's not the only kind of approach that we use. You know, there is a lot of, it's buffered together with a lot of supportive kind of language, supportive kind of framework, and, you know, psychological kind of assessment of what the patient needs in terms of what is the psychological help as well. And a lot of this, including and up to the use of the family, even not only the immediate family, but the larger kind of family and friends network of people to kind of help sustain the patient. And so that already is kind of really not militaristic in nature at all.
And just very quickly, elaborating a bit on the language you use for prevention when you talk about individual risk reduction, how do you balance a sort of a positive, constructive approach to reducing your risk with not going into shaming an individual for their actions, you know? Cancer Research in UK was recently accused of fat shaming when they targeted obesity as a leading cause of cancer, outranking smoking even. So how do you make that balance?
Okay, so for example, the way we run risk reduction. We run like little risk reduction modules in communities where we speak about and identify risks on a community level about cancer. And subsequently, what we do is we actually ask the individual person to identify their own risks by themselves using a phone or a computer. It's an app that we have, right, that we have devised. And we encourage that person to assess their own risks and by themselves. And then we offer like an individualized consultative kind of session on what are the risks that you can assess by yourself and determine that, oh, this is a risk that I may be able to change. This is a risk that I may be able to lower. This is a risk that I can live with, you know? And that's an important difference as well. Because now, rather than me telling you, you know, oh, you should run 20 kilometers a day, or you should run 30 kilometers a day, or, you know, your BMI is too high, based on this criteria, you yourself decide on what are the kind of risks that you have, and more importantly, what are the risks that you think you can live with. So on the risks that you can live with, if that is what you decide, really, it's an individual choice, and we leave that up to you, and that's an important thing. But on the risk that you choose that you can, you want to do something about, then we help you. And if you think that all these risks, I really have to mitigate, I have to do something about all of them, sure, we're there to help you as well. We try our level best at all times to, one, make it individual so that there is no this kind of shaming or you know, kind of societal judgment that go on. But at the same time, the idea is about individual choice as well.
That was Dr. Murali Tharan Munisamy, Medical Director from National Cancer Society Malaysia. And what when it comes to health messaging or campaigns, what kind of language do you think you respond to? I mean, for you, you'd be looking at preventive kind of strategies.
I think it depends on the illness itself. There's always this branding around cancer specifically that is a lot more aggressive. But personally, I think that, you know, in certain instances, of course, the war metaphors can be really helpful, because to some people, I would imagine it can be very motivational, right? This is your fight. I think it gives them that sort of control over what they can and cannot do. And that mental strength, I think, in that sort of journey is very important.
But along that lines, I was also thinking the idea of all these war metaphors, that it's a battle, it's a constant journey. I mean, I don't have experience in this, but so this is, I mean, I'm so from what I'm reading, it sounds like it could get quite tiring as well, that the idea that a cancer patient is always in a fight, that you're always battling, that it's a constant battle to fight cancer and to be a cancer survivor.
And because on the flip side of fighting is surrendering or giving up. And so do people with cancer want to necessarily be part of that narrative? Because cancer is not, I mean, the disease is so tricky as well. And very often you are perhaps stuck with a form of cancer that just doesn't respond to treatment. And then what happens? It's not because you've given up. It's not because you are not strong enough to fight. It's because it's the nature of the disease. You know?
Yeah, it's not always within your control in the way that you want to think.
There's a lot of it that is. The choosing to have the right kind of treatment is within your control. But then there's also perhaps 10-15% that's really the nature of the cancer cells in your body.
Exactly.
I mean, what we're seeing now is that health campaigns, and just like any other public information campaign, are forced to become more sensational and shocking just to catch our attention, right? Because if you see war metaphors, then that's like, oh, it's something serious, versus something that's a bit more gentle, like, oh, you should eat more veggies.
It has to really hit you hard, I think, to make you listen. I think that's the approach they want to go with.
And as Dr. Murali said, the use of strong language like fight cancer, beat it into submission, is just like, and also like you said, Chawi, it makes people feel like they're in control and not surrendering to the disease.
And even then, right, it may be arguable, because I'd like to quote another article in The Guardian, and this was written by the late Dr. Kate Granger in the UK. She had a rare type of cancer. She says, life is about living as well as possible. coping, acceptance, gentle positivity, setting short-term achievable goals, and drawing on support from those closest to you. So she didn't agree with being labeled as a fighter or a warrior because for her, it's just part of the process of living with it. We will quickly wrap up the story. We've got a couple of social media comments that we will get to when we come back from the break. So you can still weigh in on the two stories we've been discussing. Do tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or call us at 03-7733-2900. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. Earlier, we talked in our first story, we talked about Malaysians' perceptions on aging, and we spoke to Chai Senting, Senior Research Officer at the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging at University Putra, Malaysia. And we've had some feedback about this story.
So we asked you on Twitter, what do you feel most about aging? So most of you said health and finances. Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, Jasmine wrote in and said, I'd be more concerned with health first. No health means no wealth, and no wealth means no independence. But then again, without health, we can't really be independent enough to be financially well. Mm. And that's my full name said, no pension.
Okay, that relates to finances.
Yeah. And on WhatsApp, Mindy said, I've always been encouraged to start saving early, though I will admit I'm quite poor at it, but starting small helps a lot. Aging is just as hard as adulting.
Mm. Okay, and in our second story, we looked at the kind of narratives or the language that's used when we talk about cancer prevention and treatment, and a lot of it now is about fighting cancer and beating it. So some researchers were looking at whether the use of these war or militaristic metaphors are actually effective when to get people to change their behaviours.
Right, and on that note, on WhatsApp, Mindy wrote in and said, to be really frank, as someone who has a medical condition, I do feel often discouraged when people use the tone of, hey, why are you giving up? Or do you want to keep living, or do you want to get well faster? And stuff like that. So like scolding you for telling you that you can fight this. I have at times where I get my relapses. All I want to say is just that I'm tired and I'm really trying. And the people who do understand just let me rest, because it doesn't mean that I'm giving up. I'm always trying to find ways to live life while also fighting for it. Yeah, so you can keep your thoughts coming in on WhatsApp by messaging us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio on Twitter.
Okay, and that's all the time we have for this show today. If you missed any part of it, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest on our BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Live and Learn, Kelly and Issa will be looking at esports, and particularly tournament, is it called?
The Internationals for Dota 2.
Okay, you are the expert on that now. And that's coming up in the Sport Law Show. So stay tuned to that. And here's Wilco with War on War right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.